You're listening to the Zipline Logistics Truck Yeah podcast, where we explore all kinds of hot topics in the logistics industry. Get ready to learn, laugh, and get your freight on. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Zipline Logistics podcast. My name is Jesse Jewett. Joined with me, as always, our Director of Training and Development, Teddy Lee Knox. Teddy, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
I'm wonderful. We have a special guest today.
We do.
Mr. Larry Darlington, the Vice President of Waterloo Coal Company, and happens to be your father. Larry, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, we're excited to talk about bulk transportation, which is a little bit of a departure from what we normally talk about here on the Truck Yeah podcast, but you might be wondering why that is.
Yeah, a little off base from where we're normally talking about.
And I guess the point is, no matter what, the cargo, trucking never stops. There's obviously a lot of crossover between moving, you know, snack food and things like that. On-time delivery, I would imagine, is an important element of things, but a lot of shared experiences. So we're going to dive into that today.
Yep.
Anything I miss?
No, I mean, that's pretty spot on. Is there anything you want to add, Larry, about coal? We're calling you Larry. We're going to do it for the podcast.
No. Whatever you guys want to hear, just ask questions and I'll respond best I can.
Sounds great.
All right. So let's talk about CPG freight first,
Absolutely.
Teddy.
Absolutely.
Lay it on me.
So I think the things that are interesting in the CPG industry since I've been here is I have seen stricter OTIF, that on time in full requirements from major retailers like Sam's Club and Walmart. It used to be just Walmart had the OTIF. Sam's Club came in maybe in 2016 and started having that same OTIF requirement, no longer a 4-day window, a 1-day window of when you can deliver. Amazon created a vendor portal to make sure to perform performance on carriers as well as their vendors, which is a little different. And then we had the transition from a very manual process. I remember faxing companies for appointments when I first started here.
Yeah.
That's not an option anymore. It's all email portals or email or portals. And I think that that kind of shows the changes that have happened, as well as more companies going to places like One Network or creating their own portal like UNFI and Costco did.
Yeah. And a big one. We're going to get into this with the bulk freight, but shifting from paper logs, right, to electronic logging devices. Let's dive into that right now.
Absolutely.
You know, if the drivers of bulk freight, do they have required logs and hours of service?
They have to follow that also.
And do they have they shifted now recently over the last 5 years to electronic logging devices, or do they still keep a paper log?
Still do a little bit of both. The younger drivers are more into the electronics. The older drivers still need an old-fashioned paper ticket.
That's interesting. It's probably, so when you started in this industry, faxing, the phone, I would assume, is well, your two main...
Well, first off, faxing didn't even exist when I started in this industry. And we brought in the first computer weighing system into pretty much the state of Ohio at our mining operation in Oak Hill.
Wow.
It took about 3 years to start. It was developed by an internal division, actually, of Ashland Oil that eventually got spun off. But with the implementation of that, we went from having 5 or 6 people weighing trucks every day, weighing 200 or 300 trucks, to one operator being able to use the computer system and weigh 500 trucks.
Wow.
And with that, it would also print out the tickets and listings and categories for our customers and our accounting office to eliminate a lot of people in those jobs. So it really streamlined how that stuff was done. And over the next 20 years, it's just dramatically improved.
I imagine it is very different doing this with bulk. So the ELDs or the paper logs, is there a preference with drivers? Because it is a slightly different transit. It's a different type of truck and obviously different cargo.
Well, the drivers don't care. You know, the cargo is cargo. It doesn't matter what you're hauling. I mean, you still have to learn how to drive and handle the truck. I learned a long time ago that when I was interviewing and hiring drivers, you can't just hire a truck driver. You got to find out if they can drive the truck forwards, if they can back it up, if they can learn how to work the trailer, because a lot of them cannot. And even when the first CDLs were brought in the late 80s, early 90s, we had Ohio State Patrol come to our trucking company to present classes and presentations and try and calm people down so they wouldn't panic over having to apply for a CDL. We actually lost a lot of our better, older drivers. And by that, I mean people 40 years and up, because back in those days, they couldn't read. They were embarrassed by not being able to read, even though the state of Ohio set up programs to help people who couldn't read take these tests and pass them. And, you know, they were embarrassed. They just didn't want to deal with it, which was unfortunate. Younger drivers didn't have the experience. The insurance companies were panicking over it. You know, it created quite a ruffle in a way. But it wasn't only for bulk commodities. It was for over-the-road drivers. And the drivers go back and forth. You know, it's a lifestyle change. If you haul bulk commodities, you're home every night.
Right.
If you haul over the road, you're not. So guys, their wives run them out of the house. They go over road for a while. Then they get bored and they come home and haul bulk commodities for a while.
Yeah, that's what was going to be one of my questions. So, like, what's a typical, I know it changes by customer, but the length of a haul, right? So I think ours is around 600 miles. Mm-hmm. Does that sound right?
That's about right.
Yeah, so that's like a full day of transit. But you're saying they're home every night. So does that mean it's 200 miles or do you know?
We would get big breaks on our insurance by staying within a 50-mile radius where we were hauling. We would have hauls that might get up to 200 miles away. But they were not heavy volumes, and they were not drives that would require overnight travel. They were all done in a day.
Sorry, I'm not following the
And there's no show rules. Notes. There's no rules.
But we were talking earlier about the auto industry. I'm from Michigan, and you mentioned that basically the design of the plants was around the energy, which is mining, which is obviously an element of that. So. Kind of piggybacking, that's still the case today, is that we're trying to mine product, I guess, and keep that hauled within a, like you said, a 50-mile radius, because that's efficient. Obviously, the weights are heavy. You don't want to damage roads, et cetera, et cetera.
Large users of bulk commodities want to use conveyor belts if possible, because they're a little capital intense, but they run for decades, and they're incredibly inexpensive on a cost or material delivery basis. Short-distance trucking would be second. The railroad's pretty much been replaced by the over-the-road trucks.
Right.
Because the railroad just became inefficient in handling a couple of cars at a time.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you the last time I loaded a car, limestone or coal for anybody, in a rail car. I mean, it probably goes back to the 90s.
That long. Wow.
But at the same time, the railroad is very efficient at moving what they call unit trains, where they load 120 cars. 100 tons a piece of limestone or sand and gravel or iron ore or coal, and then can ship it across the country at unbelievably low cost prices. So you have to be able to handle that.
Handle as in have the essentially inventory to do so, or handle as
you gotta
in being
have a place
able to
put the inventory. You got to have a place to put 120 railroad cars when they show up. You got to be able to, empty them or dump them.
Yeah.
You know, they have rotary dump systems now, bottom dump systems. Used to be the only way to do it. So you had to have an infrastructure set up to handle that.
And I think one of the things that, you know, we're talking about the efficiency, but also goes into sustainability. And you were talking about with drivers, weeding out some drivers that may have been really great drivers because of the way things were progressing and changing. Essentially, the driver shortage that we've been dealing with ever since I've been in this industry, that's something that probably regardless of what type of truck you're driving, everyone shares that burden of not having the qualified driver. I know we were kind of laughing about making sure the driver can go forward and back up, but that's a real pain. Like when we're delivering into like even this office here, you saw our dock doors. We've had drivers deliver and not be able to back into these dock doors. And then you have to send the staff out to go unload it. And then you're no longer efficient. People are unhappy and things aren't there on time, which Jesse mentioned, regardless of the industry, if you're not on time, it's a problem. And I think that that's really interesting and kind of going into also what you were saying with you got to have a place to hold this stuff. There's so many different services that we deal with, like dropping trailers, drop yards, making sure the equipment is safe. I know that you deal with a lot of equipment issues, but I mean, what is your experience with, you know, making sure that you have the inventory and the equipment ready and the struggles that goes into to get those hauls on time?
Well, safety is very important for everybody. That's your number one concern. From my point of view, you know, I'm more into the mining side of it. I only got into the trucking industry because I couldn't find trucks to haul we would hire a lot of lease trucks. There were times we were hiring 100 or 200 a day, and they were not dependable. Some of them were very good and showed up all the time and did what they were supposed to. Some would show up, stay part of the day, and leave. But our customers have requirements like what you're talking about with yours earlier, where we have windows for delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only gotten more and more difficult. We have to carry an inventory to load the trucks, and then our customer has to carry an inventory to manage getting through the day. Because if they have to go to their inventory and not use the day material coming in, there's an added cost for them for doing that. So as an example, when we haul limestone to a road construction job, it's gotten to the point where they want so many trucks every hour to be there dumping a load of material for them. If they're paving the road, or if they're pouring concrete, or building the base to set the concrete or the asphalt on. You know, on the coal side of it, they have so many tons a day they have to burn. So let's say a power plant's going to burn 1,000 tons a day or 2,500 tons a day. They have to have 2,500 tons a day, as an example, delivered in an 8 or 10 hour window so that they have enough to burn during the day and during that night. And then you got to have trucks there for them first thing in the morning again.
That sounds a lot like what we refer to as just-in-time trucking. I don't know if you would say the same thing, but there's a lot of products that we ship to customers and retailers that have to be there in a specific amount of time due to the shelf life and due to the transportation in order to get it on the shelves on for specific stores. And I think that's one of the most interesting types of logistics. It's very underrated. It's an art. It's got to be done perfectly. And then you still have the safety, like you said.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's a little different hauling coal and limestone versus a closed truck.
Yeah, our products didn't expire, so we didn't have the shelf life you all have to deal with. But but we have a customer that gets very upset if he's running a power plant to make electricity and there's no coal to put in to make the electricity.
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds, we have a handful of ingredients customers that go to baking manufacturers, right?
Yeah,
so that's
same thing. Yeah.
Same type of deal is that they don't have a lot of shelf space or warehouse space for the product because they want it in and going to go right into a process to use it, right? They want the product to use it. You mentioned the interesting point of the drivers maybe leaving for a short period of time going to an over the road. So or hauling over the road freight. So that would be obviously lighter freight, not bulk, but they can do both. Is that correct?
Well, the weight limits are the same. A truck can only haul so much.
80,000 total.
That's it.
Really? Okay.
Even though the trucks are built to haul a lot more.
Sure.
The rules and regulations of our country and Ohio is even worse than the rest of the country.
And so those drivers, do they, when they go and say they start hauling CPG freight, right? Lighter snack foods or something that are going into a Costco. Are they running into, when they come back, do they tell you what they prefer? Does it matter to them?
Well, it changes all the time.
Yeah. Some days it's better than others.
If you're working for a company like mine running dump trucks, and we had tractor trailers and smaller dump trucks, but that's all we haul. We don't have any vans or box trailers.
Right.
If you're working for a commercial over the road truck, they don't have any dump trucks or tractor trailers like we had. So.
I have some notes here, like some things that happen at a warehouse delivery compared to a dump truck delivery. I am speculating because I don't have any experience with this. So sometimes we'll have a refusal. The freight tips over off of a pallet. I assume you don't have that very often.
No, trucks turn over all, dump trailers turn over all the time. They're very dangerous. And it's like a loaded cocked gun when you put that bed up in the air.
Yeah.
So you have to make sure nobody's standing on the side of you. They got to be so far away. You can't be walking around the bed when somebody's dumping a truck.
That's a little bit more dangerous than a pallet.
Sounds a lot easier right now. That's a lot easier to put back together.
And when a dump trailer goes over, sometimes it turns the tractor over too. So drivers have to be taught safety rules on how to handle that.
Sure.
As an example, you don't get out of your truck and stand on the sideboards while the bed's dumping.
Right.
Because it might end up on top of you.
Oh, my goodness.
I guess this is also going back to the radius of where you're delivering, that's one of the main reasons why you want a shorter haul.
Okay. Yes.
How about loading pallets correctly to avoid overweight issues? So, you know, we've got the tear, to axle tear, whatever rate. I should know that better.
It's the steer, the trailer, and the tractor. Or no, the, oh man, I don't know either.
Well, the bridge law that the federal government put in place, each state was allowed to interpret, and I spent a lot of time lobbying against how they were going to do that, which didn't work out to my benefit. But that's why you see so many axles and tires on these trucks anymore.
Yeah.
So in our industry, as an example, we have so many axles on these trucks and we do a lot of off-road work that it's a real problem because the trucks can't steer when they get in a field or if they're in a mining operation where they're on soft dirt. Because if you've got our dump trucks now, as an example, run six axles, which is way too many tires to be on the ground trying to turn in dirt.
Yeah.
So there makes the truck more difficult to handle. On the over-the-road trucks, the 80,000-pound limit, you just haul. To get there, you haul a longer trailer and you spread the axles out further apart. On our trucks, they're just all lined up right next to each other. It doesn't even look like you can crawl underneath the truck. They're so close.
So then you don't have like tandems that you would move in a dump truck like you would?
To redistribute the weight. Yeah, it's all...
Not in Ohio.
Okay. And I'm sorry, it is the drive, the steer, and the trailer axle.
You were
Took me a minute, but I got it.
Yeah.
I actually... Taking a break from these issues, you had mentioned that you got into owning your own trucks because of you couldn't find trucks for sale. You couldn't get someone to help you with the trucking portion
of it. We would lease trucks and haul our products.
Okay. Is there any advice you would give? This is actually something that I feel like we deal with customers a lot, where they're either looking to get their own trucks or find an asset-based broker. Or even going to what I would consider this similar to customer pickup or CPU, where they're just basically selling this out for someone with trucks to handle their issues. What advice would you give to someone before they go into trying to do something where they are managing their own trucks?
Well, the best advice I could give is from my older partner who passed away a few years ago, that the only person dumber than a truck driver is the guy who owns them. So I would be very, very careful before I make the decision to start buying my own trucks because it's a different industry than manufacturing or than mining and requires a total different line of thinking.
Maintenance and all, there's a lot of added.
Maintenance is there, period. I mean, whether you're manufacturing or mining or running trucks, it's always there. Mm-hmm. Just like we bought a new truck and it was 3 weeks late in delivering, even though it was sitting in the lot of the dealer here in Columbus. Got delivered late, finally gets up and running, and it worked for an hour and a half before it broke. Brand spanking new truck. Now, we waited months and months for this thing to be built, and they still can't tell me what's wrong with it. The dealer's had it since Tuesday. You just don't know.
Yeah.
Wow.
Find someone else to deal with the trucking issues.
Well, but it's the same way on mining equipment. You know, just like this morning, our Caterpillar 980 loader that we're loading clay with the day out of the pit breaks down. And, you know, luckily it's the first time it broke down in a while, but, you know, that stuff happens. And whether it's going to be down in 2 hours or 3 days, we don't know that.
Yeah.
Do you have a backup one of those or no?
No, we didn't.
No.
Okay. So then what? We shut down?
Right now we shut down.
Okay.
We have other things we can do and go haul with the trucks.
Sure.
Rather than park everybody, but it's... you know, you got to deal with it.
Yeah.
It's expensive if you have backup. So, you know, in a world like today where we're trying to be competitive, the cost of having, these loaders, front-end loaders cost $1 million a piece. It's not something you have a spare. So
right.
On.
Yeah.
Just in case $1 million laying around. Yeah. That would be nice.
Which I feel like we run into that issue with our customers a lot. Our other broker bought in a reefer and it needs to be van. How can you help us? Like the CPG, because of the different types of trailers, you have a couple more options. You can make things work with a reefer, a dry van, a box truck. And like you said, it sounds like you're shifting operations more than shifting the type of equipment when things happen.
All right.
I have some notes here about some fun stories.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start.
Yes.
We used to manage a store delivery, store building. So we're building a retail store. One of our customers is developing a retail store and we would deliver. As you can imagine, that's at a mall. So they're doing all of their work between like 10 p.m. when the mall closes and 6 a.m. when the mall opens. So 3 a.m., 4 a.m. delivery call on my cell phone. Where is your driver? We got to find him. Oh, he's over there at the Victoria's Secret when he should be over here at the, the Arby's putting in the booths. Do you have any fun anecdotes like that in your... Sounds like multiple decades of work.
There's I can't tell you how many times drivers, my wife could probably tell you better than I could. Drivers would call at 3 and 4 in the morning. questions like that. And sometimes they just call to talk. It's just,
right.
You know, when they invented the cell phones in the early 80s and people started using them, a guy driving down the road at 4 a.m, bored, doesn't have anything to do, nothing on the radio, you know. That was before satellite radio.
Right.
He would just call and ask a couple questions that really didn't even need to be asked. Just
some, maybe he's trying to stay awake.
Yeah.
If only had the Truck Yeah podcast then.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, guys with these dump trailers would go to dump and they'd end up, well, the first load of coal I sold, the truck dumped the load of coal on my buyer and, you know, buried him up to his chest. Now, we were lucky he wasn't hurt.
Yeah.
That was a plant up in Fort Wayne, Indiana, but just people not paying attention to what they're doing.
Whoa, that's an interesting call to get, I imagine, 3 a.m. So we need to dig out the buyer.
Well, no, the trucker didn't even tell me, though. The buyer called me and, hey, you know, they dumped a load of coal on me. And after they got me dug out, I had to go get an emergency room and get x-rayed and checked out. But I'm good. And just make sure the next load doesn't do that.
Make sure he checks behind him. Yeah, we've had a few of those drivers pulling away from the dock when the doors haven't been closed or the light hasn't been off and either someone's in it or a forklift's in it.
And there's always guys dumping where they shouldn't dump. You know, these big road jobs, as an example, they have very stringent requirements on where you dump into a machine that feeds the stone right into the process of the blacktop or the base. And you wouldn't believe how many people would miss that box or dump before it or dump to the side of it.
So then what?
Dump on a building and knock it over. Well, it's
get out some shovels or?
Somebody gets out the shovel and cleans it up.
Again, perspective, a lot easier to move a pallet.
Yeah.
A little bit less complicated.
Yeah.
What do you got, Teddy? What's any good stories?
I have a lot of good stories, similar to buyers calling and asking if I could airlift a rail truck to deliver it faster, or why I couldn't deliver straight from Florida to Texas, why we had to go through other states, like interesting things of explaining logistics to people or making sure that they understood them. Starting off, we all took the phones. We all took turns taking the phones in the nights and the morning. So I got some fun 3 a.m. calls, too.
Yeah.
Some interesting questions. Always a lot of fun interactions.
What do you want us to know about bulk freight?
Well, cost is very important. And, you know, with the inflation that's incurred over the last couple of years, our last truck, as an example, when we were buying them a few years ago, $160,000, you know, now they want $260,000. And that's in a 4 and 5 year time period.
Mm-hmm.
And people are going to have to really learn how to balance operational cost and revenue, or they're not going to be able to pay their bills going forward. And what that's going to lead towards the cost of building a road or getting electricity made is going to be astronomical going forward for our country.
Got any tips on managing that?
No.
Is that another episode?
Looking for all I can handle.
I bet.
They need to get it under control. Reducing a lot of these laws and regulations would help.
Sounds like the Columbus, Ohio housing market, too.
Yeah, same thing. Same thing.
It's crazy. I'm going to wrap it up if that's okay.
Yeah, I think that's
it. I think the most important element, first of all, thank you for coming on. I've been in this industry now for 17 years, 12 here at Zipline, and I continue to have my eyes opened and my mind blown, if you will, on trucking in general, right? It is shocking and surprising and impressive the amount of freight that moves, certainly within our country, our state, and more. And every day I feel like I learn something new. And there's a lot of people that are on the ground doing the work that is really important to keep our country moving. So first of all, thank you to all those people out there. But whether it's CPG or bulk freight, we're all connected in that way. So it's pretty cool to see all that information. So again, thank you to for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for joining me.
Appreciate y'all having me. Thank you.
Absolutely. We will see you next time on the podcast. Thanks, everybody.